This is Melissa. It is the 12th of October, 2025, and I hope that you're all doing really well. So I have thrown down the gauntlet for myself here this evening as I record this, and I'm not going to tell you how many minutes I've given myself, but I am going to try to illustrate a video with as few images as possible. I considered replaying a redux that would, you know, a video that I'd already made. But I was listening to this talk the other day, and I thought it was really good, timely in its own way, and something I wanted to share with you. One of the reasons why I need to manage my time so well right now is because of the extras in Book Club. I have a video that I need to do this week for a talk that was delivered 3 weeks ago, and then we just had a wonderful recording today in Book Club brought to us by Andrea and Laura, very thought-provoking, and I'll need to illustrate that next, although God love Andrea for her graphics that she supplies in the screen share, so yay, that helps. But at any rate, that keeps me busy, and Book Club is a priority for me right now. It was one thing last year when we were covering Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope, but we started Alan Watts' Waiting for the Miracle in the late spring, and this is essential reading. So I'm focused on that. I will be covering a section in the next recording in 3 weeks, and that will be shared with several other members of the Book Club group. So it's important work, and I don't want to sell anything else that I'm doing short, but that's what's keeping me busy. Now, there's one thing that I find interesting about Book Club and the Book Club chat channel on Telegram, is that sometimes I'll pop over there and no one is talking about Alan Watt and no one is talking about Waiting for the Miracle. And in fact, no one's talking about books. It'll be a back and forth on interesting topics, and usually they are interesting. But I'm not saying it has to be all Alan Watt and all his book and all books all the time. But Alan was big on stressing that he had learned these things because of the time that he spent reading dusty old books. And so he believed that reading as much as you could was a good way to bring this information into your own head and cement it as much as possible. Now, you can not read, that's fine. But one thing that I will point out about the difference between reading things that interest you and then confining your reading to what you get online or what other people, contemporary people, are saying is that you're likelier to get a spin that way. If you just go to the library and check out one of those dusty old books that Alan Watt has referenced, and you put that together with your own lived experience and your own observations, the chances are better that you'll be seeing what you see instead of something that is being downloaded into you. Because when you stay within the news cycle, and that is one thing I was thinking about. I was doing some laundry yesterday, and I was thinking about wash cycles and spin cycles and drying cycles. And the thing about the cycle on a washer and dryer is that you just go round and round and round and round and round, and that's what a news cycle is. And so, books. I'll come back to books in a moment, but I'll go ahead and tell you right now that the talk that I chose to go up is from October 12, 2014. And yes, that's how I picked it initially. Just looked at the date. Shame is lame. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me thrice. And Alan covers a lot of important things here. I'll just give a real quick highlight of what I thought was most important, but the way that we are trained through gradualism and through indoctrination, repetition, we are programmed, really, even more than trained, just programmed. He also talks about the wartime scenario that we need to have applied to us to get us to agree to things like the climate change con. And we certainly saw that played out during COVID. And he mentioned an MP in the UK. He didn't mention her by name, but he was speaking of Caroline Lucas. I've looked her up a few times, and she was the one who was, you know, Green Party. Oh, shoot, we need to have some kind of wartime scenario because then we can get people to do things like rationing. It's a wartime scenario. And COVID-19 was a wartime scenario. I remember being in Canada and having to call stores, because Alan and I were going to make a trek into town to find out how many eggs we could buy, or, you know, what else was being rationed, because that's what that was. There was a listener in the U.S. who sent Alan yeast, and thank God for her, because I made our bread, and it was and we couldn't get yeast in Canada during that time. That's a wartime scenario. And just the militarization of the police in general. I saw this yesterday. I took my old vehicle up to the local gas station to put gas in it. And I noticed when I pulled in, it's a new gas station there, quite large, lots of pumps. And I pulled in there and I saw a cop car. I noted it. I couldn't tell you any other vehicle that was there, but I did notice the cop car. And I pulled in, and naturally the pump that I selected was not working. So I had to pull around and find a different pump. And when I did, I was facing out towards the exit, and oh, there comes that cop car. And of course he stopped right in front of me and rolled his window down and motioned in a, you know, not unfriendly way that he wanted to talk to me. So I walked over and I was close to his car. I was getting closer and he said, "Love your car." So he wanted to, he guessed the year. And, you know, I said, "Well, I, you know, try to take good care of it because these are my wheels." And so that was it. Now, was he gauging to see if the car was inspected? Were the stickers up to date? Yes, he probably was. When I was close enough now to the window of his car that I could take him in with all of his gear, his big heavy vest on him and all of the paraphernalia coming out of the vest. And also, and this is probably a typical thing with cops now, is that he had a really nice laptop hooked up to the car and all this GPS equipment. His car was really, you know, like a data center there at the front seat. So I noted that, and he just complimented the car again and drove on. Another thing that I noticed, and I have mentioned this before, during COVID was that we had a splintering of the media. So before you had what you'd call the mainstream and the kind of alternative media. And so, you know, Alan said here in this talk, now folk turn to what they think is alternative media to let them know what's going on, really going on, and they're conned just the same way. Be terrified about this today. Be terrified about that tomorrow. Now, one of the things that I noticed during COVID was this tremendous splintering. So we weren't so much left with an alternative versus the mainstream, but all of these almost like citizen journalists popping up everywhere. And I think that they are authorized and they're giving us a specific kind of spin. And this again is why the dusty old books are so important, because we can dive in and get something that you are not going to hear anybody talk about anywhere in the mainstream. And they're not going to talk about it anywhere in the alternative. And Alan got his little dig in here when he said that what he was talking about tonight, that was October 12, 2014, it would be picked up by the alternatives. He's gotten that dig in a few times. Yes, absolutely. People used his material, and of course they never credited him. But at least they were using some decent material, eh? So yesterday I was doing a little cleaning project, and I was in my bedroom. And in my bedroom is a nice bookshelf that was my mother's. So it was my childhood bedroom that she took over and turned into her office. And now I'm back and I have moved, you know, I've called that my bedroom again. But it was a pretty little bookshelf, one of those wooden ones with glass-fronted doors, and I left it there. And I've added a couple of my books to it, but for the most part, it's my mother's books in there. And I have not changed them, moved them, gone through them, sorted them, not even really noticed that much because I have plenty of my own books to look at. But I'll tell you something about my mother. She loved history. She was a musician and she taught music, but she was really a historian. She was a historian because she read a massive amount of books, and that was the area that she loved. She loved art and beautiful things, music and, you know, that kind of thing. But she was, any history she really loved. And I just was, the way that I was cleaning, I saw on the shelf there that she had two books about Lawrence, T.E. Lawrence. We call him Lawrence of Arabia. And I pulled them out. And the first was called Lawrence in Arabia by Scott Anderson. War, Deceit, Imperial Folly, and the Making of the Modern Middle East. And then she had another book called Guerrilla Leader, T.E. Lawrence and the Arab Revolt. This Guerrilla Leader provides an important new window on the achievements of T.E. Lawrence. A fascinating campaign, a study of that. Now, my mother would have read these. I didn't see in her bookshelf T.E. Lawrence's book, the one he wrote himself called Seven Pillars of Wisdom. And this had come up recently in book club discussion when someone, Graham, mentioned that he was reading it for at least the second time. And I thought to myself, I've never read that. And certainly Alan Watt talked about it, but I haven't read it. And so I pulled it down and I already had that as, bedside reading when I noticed that my mother had these books. Now, why is it important? Well, it's because the more widely we read, the more we're going to understand why what's happening in the Middle East might be happening. What is the position of Israel? What is its function over there right now? Is its function, are the Jews and the Israelis just there to be the scapegoat so that we can throw, you know, eggs at them? Well, that's part of it. But a book that Alan Watt has mentioned many times, many, many times, especially in conjunction with the Balfour Declaration, is that we read the book of Ronald Storrs. I believe he eventually came on to be called Sir Ronald Storrs, and his book, Orientations. So I looked that up before I sat down to record, and lo and behold, right there on the wiki page, T.E. Lawrence commented in Seven Pillars of Wisdom. I just cracked the book open yesterday, but it's there if I'm to believe wiki. This is what T.E. Lawrence said. The first of all of us was Ronald Storrs, Oriental Secretary of the Residency, the most brilliant Englishman in the Near East and subtly efficient, despite his diversion of energy in love of music and letters, of sculpture, painting, of whatever was beautiful in the world's fruit. Storrs was always first and the great man among us. So there's one military man praising another. So I opened it up. One comment that Graham had made about it was that the writing style was so different than what we get now. I think he was saying we've been dumbed down. And I'm on the first chapter, and I was so amazed by paragraph number 1, 2, 3, 4. I think this is the fifth paragraph. I'll give you the first couple of sentences, and then I'm going to dive right over to the fifth paragraph. So he starts off, this is the very beginning of the book. Some of the evil of my tale may have been inherent in our circumstances. For years, we lived anyhow with one another in the naked desert under the indifferent heaven. By day, the hot sun fermented us, and we were dizzied by the beating wind. At night, we were stained by dew and shamed into pettiness by the innumerable silences of stars. We were a self-centered army without parade or gesture, devoted to freedom, the second of man's creeds, a purpose so ravenous that it devoured all our strength, a hope so transcendent that our earlier ambitions faded in its glare. Okay, so I read the next little bit, and then I got to the fifth paragraph. Listen close. The Arab was by nature continent, and the use of universal marriage had nearly abolished irregular courses in his tribes. The public women of the rare settlements we encountered in our months of wandering would have been nothing to our numbers, even had their rattled meat been palatable to a man of healthy parts. In horror of such sordid commerce, our youths began indifferently to slake one another's few needs in their own clean bodies, a cold convenience that by comparison seemed sexless and even pure. Later, some began to justify this sterile process and swore that friends quivering together in the yielding sand with intimate, hot limbs and supreme embrace found there, hidden in the darkness, a sensual coefficient of the mental passion which was welding our souls and spirits in one flaming effort. Several, thirsting to punish appetites they could not wholly prevent, took a savage pride in degrading the body and offered themselves fiercely in any habit which promised physical pain or filth. Okay, so Graham is right. It's a completely different style of writing. But if you listened closely and you're thinking about it, you may already know what T.E. Lawrence was saying. But what he is saying is, the Arabs were continent. That means they practiced abstinence or a sublimation of the sexual urge. And they had universal marriage. That means they had to get married. That means they had an outlet. Whereas among their band of soldiers, there was no outlet. And all they had was the public women. That's prostitutes. And there weren't enough for the amount of men in their band. And even if there had been enough, they were, what did he say? They're rattled meat. So they weren't very palatable. They weren't appetizing. And so the men took to each other. So that tells you right there a little something about, as the cover of my mother's book said, war, deceit, imperial folly, and the making of the modern Middle East. So we get an idea there who made the modern Middle East. We covered Hollywood today in the book club recording, and I remembered that I did a four-part series back in the summer of June into July, I think, of 2023, a four-part series on the movies, politics, and predictive programming. And I hadn't really remembered what I had written, but I wanted to share them with the group since we were talking Hollywood. And so I went through them and looked, and I saw, oh dear, there's a couple of typos in each one because I'm not the best proofreader of my own material. So I thought, oh, I'll clean them up. I'll put them on Substack. but I found that I was writing in one of them about my brother giving me a copy, giving me a book from his collection entitled Mr. Baruch. And I'll post this again so that all of you can read it. It won't just be confined to book club. But it was interesting because the wink, wink reason for shortening women's hem lengths, for making the line of the clothing, how it fit the body, more body hugging, was to save material. Because you see, Baruch, who was an investment, you know, he was a Wall Street speculator, he was in charge of the raw materials and the resources, because no one better to run that for national defense than someone who speculates in resources. But there was an interesting quote in the book there as he was dealing with the advisory commission to the Council of National Defense. And there was a discussion on continence. Now, this is not a word that we hear that much. I just read it there from T.E. Lawrence. But they were discussing that. And this was the word, I'm reading now from Not Sure, this was the word that was at one time used to describe self-restraint or abstinence from sexual intercourse. Samuel Gompers was furious with Dr. Martin. What have you been doing? Sold out to the so-called social hygienists and prohibition fanatics. When have our fighting men been preached to on the value of continence? Real men will be men. It was ultimately decided that alcohol and prostitutes would be controlled rather than prohibited. And Not Sure's comment was, what this means is that during World War I, the U.S. government assigned to itself the job of pimp and bartender. So I didn't make my deadline here. I had set the clock for when I wanted to stop talking, and I missed it, sorry. But that's the story of reading. It's the story of reading widely, and then you understand, and you're not left to just some loud mouth on the internet or some loud mouth with a show on, you know, the alternative or the mainstream, who's going to tell you what's going on in the Middle East or what's going on with Russia, Ukraine, and it's all got the authorized spin. And that is the beauty. That's just one of the beautiful things about Alan Watt, is he did not give you authorized spin. He was his own man. And so his is a trustworthy voice for me. And that is it. I will be back next week. I may not be back next week. I may be reduxing a redux without even an intro. So I just need to get caught up on a few things. I want to get caught up on correspondence, which I'm behind, sadly behind on, and I want to do these book club things. So, reading is good. Don't just take it from talking heads. Alan would say this. Bill Cooper said this. Verify for yourself. Go to the source. And take care. Thank you. And before I sign off altogether, please support me. If you haven't ordered Alan Watt's books, if you need his discs in CD form, if you want flash drives, go to the website. Go to cuttingthroughthematrix.com and see what's available and how you can support what I'm doing if you like it. Thank you.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on October 12th, 2014. I'd like to wish everyone out there the best because we're all going through hard, hard times and we're bombarded with mind control news stories continuously, which is all part of the great work, of course, because the greatest way to control everyone out there, and they've known this for thousands of years, is to terrify the bejesus out of you, basically. I've gone through this before about adaptation, this Darwinian process of humanity, how we adapt to things, things we shouldn't adapt to, actually, especially when it's false, you see, but it's for control purposes. And the elite have always known this down through the ages, because even in ancient Rome, there's a fascinating study of ancient Rome, because the emperors would often be deposed and coups would take place. Generals would step in to become the major domo. And they'd stage many events to happen to get the public to cry for government and more governmental power to keep them safe. And that's what we hear all the time now. In fact, everything is about keeping you safe, supposedly, as you become broker and broker, and you're adapting to it all, thinking it's all quite normal. It's amazing, really, with such incredible news today. It's worldwide news from probably thousands of stations, if you add them all up, radio and television and so on, across the whole planet. They're all getting the same information at the same time, and it's easy to keep everyone in step with each other as we're programmed to accept all this nonsense that we're hit with and steadily. And back in the 90s, I remember being doing a radio show, and I was going through what I knew was coming because I'd watched the militarization of police across the world. Back in about 98, I think it was, maybe, Alan Rock in Canada, who was the Attorney General at the time for Canada, single-handedly, basically, put forward a bill, all drafted up, all neatly and all the rest of it, meaning whole hordes of lawyers had already approved this thing, and presented it, which passed without a problem in Parliament, without any question, really. That left everybody puzzled, including the journalists for a change, because generally they're part of the whole scam, but they weren't in on the know. But the bill was to do with basically a martial law type bill. In 98, people were going along like lazy cats in a hot summer's day. They didn't. It was so quiet at that time, apart from inflation and all that stuff, which is built into the fake money system. And basically, you couldn't imprison anybody without trial, etc., etc. The whole, it was a crime omnibus bill that they passed it under, which was a complete anti-terrorist bill. Bill Clinton, of course, did the same thing in the States after he failed to get it through in the 90s, late 90s. And then that very weekend, after it was turned down, they had the Oklahoma City bombing, and bingo, they passed it in two or three days later. So you can see when things work in concert like this, that there's big moves way above what you think is the political powers on the go all the time, and involving all these massive, massive government structures and agencies and private agencies all work with government on behest of the guys who really control the planet. Because if you think the planet is just bashing along with countries knocking each other, you're up a gum tree, as we used to say. And you truly are, because nothing is further from the truth. The future is always planned intricately, including all the wars and everything else will happen and scare you to death, to make sure that the public have plenty of time to be programmed in preparation for it. And you're programmed through various news articles, etc. But back in the 90s, I'd already studied all the different professors' reports from departments of sociology and anthropology and psychology and behaviorism and neuroscience, and all these guys that were getting massive grants and always had done from the government, massive departments, all working towards something to do with total control of all of you. That's why it's so perfect today. And of course, entertainment at the top was in on it in a big fashion as well. Because most of your programming, if you're not getting it from what you think is the news, is coming through entertainment. And in entertainment, your guard is down. It doesn't occur to you to keep your firewall up, basically, and your mind. And you're penetrated so easily by a whole bunch of scenes that will be where you identify with the hero or heroine, depends on a whole bunch of factors, especially these days. And then they bring you into the political correctness, how your attitude on this or that or whatever it should be altered to conform with the so-called good guy in the movie. And that's how easy it's all done. Aldous Huxley said on I think it was a Walt McWallace interview many, many moons ago, that the people could be trained to basically into a system by a scientific elite where they'd accept things that perhaps they shouldn't accept. And we've all accepted things today. It's been going on since really rampaging on since the 60s. Now, the big futurist departments of all these agencies that work for the big boys at the top and the big foundations and the big international corporations are all tied together, and probably, and I'm pretty certain actually, they're all owned by the same few shareholders at the top with controlling shares, decide the future always. And they're very big on keeping control. Nothing is left to chance. And I mean nothing is left to chance. They have all these agencies out there always spying in the public in your little street. In fact, you live, there'll be somebody there who's an informant for whatever major agency you have. In Canada, you have CSIS and God knows how many assets, as they call them now. People who get partial paychecks, semi-retired, retired, whatever it happens to be, to basically inform of anything that happens in the area. And it's always been like that, by the way, but more so today, in fact. Because they planned big changes a long time ago when they said they'd have to train the public. Now, when you go into the history too, things stand out. Even recent history, things stand out. And that's what you must never forget. Never forget when you've been taken for a sucker. And then you do it again. Never, ever forget being taken for a sucker. And no matter how much fear and terror is pumped out there, don't fall for the same con again. There's an old saying, it's fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Never forget this technique. Back again about the year 2000, I think it was maybe, a major politician in the British Parliament for the Green Party said that because of the direction we've all been pushed in for a long time, their goals for sustainability, population reduction, they didn't need the massive working class anymore, and they had to reduce the population and keep all the resources for themselves at the top. They pushed for the vegetarian diets, etc., across the planet, except for themselves too, because they can't have too many farting cows, they said, across the world feeding all of us. And so the big push is all. So how can you accomplish all of that? How do you do it? Well, you must put so many articles in newspapers that the public can't keep up with them, but they're being programmed through lots of little nature shows and documentary specials that are put on mainstream television, in the newspapers, magazines, etc. All information must be guided along the same course, basically. And you are programmed and you adapt along with it. I think it's all quite natural. It's something that may have shocked you at first. 10 years later, with so much programming, oh yeah, I guess we can start eating crickets and grasshoppers and it's okay, and locusts and things, because some supposedly famous movie star is doing it and leading the way. So easy to adapt, as Huxley said, to things that perhaps we shouldn't accept. Now, this woman from the Green Party loved the way the British government was handled during World War II. Big wars are great experiments to see if they can make everything happen the way they want them to happen and control the public for obedience purposes, because you're all threatened for total extinction by the Nazis or whoever it happens to be, and all food is rationed, like Britain and so on, tremendously rationed, and you have to see the old documentaries put out at the time. They're fascinating to see these, one propaganda documentary after another on agriculture, on keep your curtains closed, you get fined by the air raid wardens if there's a chink of light going out there because the bombers will see them and bomb you, and turn anybody in who questions anything outside the norm, etc., etc. They trained a whole population to go, lots of government inspectors that go around butcher shops, for instance, and check how much meat was coming in, how much was going out on the ration cards, and what was maybe being sold on the black market or hidden or consumed by the butcher and his family. You wouldn't believe how they trained the whole society to go along with this. And this was really from about 1939, 1940, right up into the 1951, they stopped the rationing cards in Britain. And this woman from the Green Party says, well, they were so well behaved, and the whole country obeyed government departments and fell into line because they were terrified, you see. And if they only bring that back, she says, how easy it would be to manage everyone. Isn't that wonderful, she says. And bingo, you have 9/11/2001. And I think it was that very night I was on a radio show on WWCR, at the time, and I said, you know, the host said, what do you think we have to look forward to the future? I says, well, the hardest thing for the future from now on. So I looked at all the build-up to all of this, the massive build-up and propaganda through the 90s, all the professorial letters and publications out there. I said, the hardest thing was to hold on to your sanity as you go through this. It's a roller coaster, you see. And guess what? People have already adapted to the massive changes. Things they ought not to have adapted to. Now, since 9/11, we've had an onslaught of the whole world agenda rammed down our throats daily. From little talk shows, from AM stations, or in your big cities and so on, or FM stations, all across the board, incessantly, sustainability, we're consuming too much, austerity, everyone's forgotten about austerity. As you go into it, and you've been in it for a while, they've just dropped the word now that they've trained you, that things will just naturally go up and up and up. And as I said many years ago, the plan was also to make sure that all your extra spending money was taken from you, your purchasing power, monthly basically, or weekly, and we go to bare essentials down the road. And that's where you are now. A lot of folk are there. Many are not, because they're working for government agencies or teachers or whatever, or social work departments or bureaucrats and local governments. All these folk don't notice as much because they have indexed related cost of living thing tacked on annually, real cost of living, as opposed to the fake stuff that you get with your little pay raise, which you expect is normal because you've been trained it's normal every year. You get it, and it's never enough to keep up with the inflation, because it's designed that way. It's designed that way. You see, when you're deindustrialized, they take away your cigarettes and your cheaper booze, all the clubs you go to, and so on, and you're into austerity. You see, they don't need you anymore. They don't have to keep you happy by leaving you a little bit to yourself to make sure you go off and slog at that rotten factory all day long. And that's why in China they can buy cheap cigarettes for their labor force, and cheap this and cheap that, and keep them happy. This technique is so old, and people never think about it, but you see, it's all well understood. But 9/11 was the key to it all. Everybody knew it was going to happen, apparently every government agency across the planet, except the US. I just suddenly forgot that day that they had the special stand down with the aircraft and the Air Force, because it was a practice drill. And it's always happening in practice drills, isn't it? The same with the 7/7 thing in Britain, London bombing. It was a practice drill that day. And jings, they didn't expect a real thing to happen. That was just too much by surprise. And you believe this rubbish. Do you know you do? You believe this tripe. A mouse couldn't break wind in this planet without them knowing something was going to happen, because everything is so penetrated with so many agencies and informants and so on, well-implanted, embedded sleepers and all. There's nothing can happen that they don't know is going to happen. If they want to thwart it before it happens, they will, and they do. But if it wanted to happen, then they actually finance it to happen. They actually can create the circumstances and even the so-called terrorists to make it all happen. It's very, very simple. Old tricks. Getting back to the Green Party, remember what she said? A war-type situation is where everyone obeys government and they all behave, and they're told to run in their air raid shelters. They all do and cram together because they don't have private ones like the big elite do in Winston Churchill, where they had ballrooms underground to have big nightly parties. No. You crammed in air raid shelters in subways, etc., in London, and they still didn't kill each other. We crammed in there night after night. Nope, they sung little songs, happy songs about leaving their chewing gum on the bedpost overnight, and happy ditties like that. How we're managed, eh? Is this stuff so amazing? So incredibly amazing. It's sad. It truly is sad. But folk forget so fast. doesn't matter how, even the guys on 9/11 with all the inconsistencies we've been told by government agencies, what happened that day, as opposed to what you knew was did not happen or did happen that day, and the evidence, etc., as to the whys, you've all forgotten it with the Ebola scare. The Ebola scare. Oh, it's going to kill us all. Oh, it took everybody by surprise. It really did. Again, I've read on the air, maybe 2 or 3 times a year when they have the big exercises every year, 2 or 3 times a year, with Canada, the States, and Mexico, armies across the big chunks of the continent, about, it could be for everything, natural disasters, plagues, pandemics, all these things are all considered, you see, terrorism. And by God, they just didn't know someone's going to come in, supposedly from Africa or Liberia, with an infection. Are you kidding me? Did this guy even exist? Did he exist? The media is just publishing what the official spokespeople, the people who literally censor and decide what you're going to be told. Remember, in warfare, you have a Department of Information. And even in non-warfare, it never stopped in Britain, a Department of Information. Most countries are the same. As to what the publics are going to be told, or what they've been going to be told to worry about or not worry about, whatever, or even what's true, or what is completely fabricated, it doesn't matter. And the media parrots it, you see. But they didn't see anything coming. They never see anything coming. Isn't that strange? All these exercises and billions of dollars spent every year, and they don't see anything. They never see anything coming. You're told and you believe it. Oh, ho, ho, ho. Now, I'm not saying this didn't happen. I'm saying question it. You don't know. Remember, fool me once, etc. You see, you got to start thinking for yourself. If you don't want to have a memory, and lots of folks actually don't want to have memories, they like to live in the now, they call it. And the now is what the media tells them is really happening. It saves them the frustration of having to remember things. I say, my God, maybe we're all being fooled here. But they don't really want to do much thinking for themselves. After all, it's a bit of an effort when you can be entertained. You turn on entertainment and do whatever you do. Remember what Albert Pike said too. The so-called Pope of Freemasonry in the 1800s, he said, those who want to think for themselves and use their own reason are therefore steak on the table and beasts of burden by choice and consent. You could dream that up, like he invented that whole thing. No, they've always known this at the top, of how to manage vast populations. They give you the culture. They change the culture when it suits them and you all follow it because you think it's incremental. You adapt and adapt and adapt without even thinking, most folk. They adapt without thinking, without even asking why. Why anything, you see? Or as Brzezinski said, between two ages, shortly the public will be unable to reason for themselves or think for themselves because they'll expect the media to do the reasoning for them. Really? When I was small, the people in Scotland anyway, and I'm sure a good part of England, were very suspicious of government and media because they knew that all media was privately owned by big magnates and moguls that controlled everything. And their media interests were one part of their massive worldwide financial interests with other big corporations. It was one conglomerate. How we've been trained to forget that, haven't we? Really trained. I can remember in the late 70s, all the movies they churned out and things for TV. And I didn't watch much TV, but the little bits I got here and there, even visiting people's homes, were such infantile rubbish to pass your time. And also get, you debased into adapting to the culture that we're pushing on television. And these terrible Dukes of Hazzards, guys that ran around making moonshine, I think it was, and fast cars, and pants literally that you couldn't bend down on, they'd rip. But I mean, this is the nonsense they churned out non-stop. Like nothing was happening. Was the basically the external message you got, but loaded in it is rubbish. It was telling you to be infantile too. You see. And before that, it churned out silly things, because the whole entertainment media, or conglomerate again, is totally as fashion, music. Books, novels, all these things, all the movies, all these are all part of one system, and they work completely together. If you don't believe it, look at the average movie, and you'll see, for instance, at the end, with all the transcript, the things at the end where they give you the producers and the production managers and all the different assistants and yada yada yada, they'll tell you who supplied the vehicles for all the smashes that they had, or the ones that they want you to buy. And the watches, who made them, the fashions, who supplied the clothing and the dressing for the latest, blah, blah. And then the music too, written by and played by, yada yada. And so it's all one big system. Plato talked about it in his day for what they had back then, based on commerce, you see. It all works together beautifully. Beautifully. In ancient Greece, I've mentioned this before, for a long period, it was decreed that everyone, even the slaves, had to attend traveling shows that were authorized to go around and do dramas, because they knew it not only created the culture, it helped to maintain the culture, give them what you've trained them to be used to, and also incremental changes. Like, in times of war, they would put out that type of thing where the family on stage would say bye-bye to the lovely young son who's going off to fight whoever happened to be. That's never changed. And you get caught up in the emotion, and that, next thing you know, you're all for it, this war. And the young guys are brainwashed, thinking, oh, I've got all this glory. I'm a nobody right now, but I'll be a somebody then, you see. And I'll get all this glory when I come back. For killing all them awful enemies. Ooh. You see, we're so well understood. And the art of governing is ancient. Absolutely ancient. Pre-Greek and all the rest of it. It's ancient. Now, back to what I said. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. How many times do you want to be fooled here? It's up to you, isn't it? Mind you, knowing things doesn't mean you can discuss it with those you know, because you see, brainwashing really works. And with incredible, incredible electronic, massive indoctrination system on a daily, 24-hour basis, it's very difficult to find people who think for themselves. Most folk go with the flow. In fact, they say, well, I'm sane because everybody I meet has the same opinion on this particular topic as I do. Therefore, I must be sane. It doesn't occur to you that you can all be wrong. This schizophrenia of the mind is fascinating, actually, because the same people have no problem whatsoever to take a topic that's hashed to death, by the way, over and over and over, about a whole country taken over by, say, Nazism. Like this is how it's presented. Like nobody in Germany had a brain of their own. They're all mesmerized by one man. Utterly, completely, like until they acted like one body of like automatons or cyborgs or something, or robots, all programmed with the same programming. This is how you're supposed to believe it, you see. And you do believe it, most of you, because you've seen so many movies about it, and oh, it always ends up back with the Nazis. They never mention the Bolsheviks and the communists and the massive millions and millions they slaughtered over many years until the Berlin Wall fell down. Because, you see, it was planned that they would be our pals eventually. It was never planned that the Nazis would be our pals afterwards. You see, that's how the con game works. But the Germans just went to war when they were ordered to go to war, and young guys joined up, like any country will join up when they're told to join up because they think it's going to be exciting and glorious, and they want to believe the basic simple propaganda that's pumped out at the time. Every country does this. We still get simple propaganda. In fact, it's a technique to propaganda that must keep it simple. There must be an element of confusion there. Do you know that? Now, what I'm going to tell you will be parried by lots of talk shows very quickly, but this is a truth here. You see, if something is too elaborate and thought out for you to parrot, it will seem too elaborate. And folk will question that. Well, I don't believe it. It's just too pat. It's down too pat, you see. So you get vague things like 9/11. It's all vague, you see, except these bad guys supposedly came across in a plane, or they hijacked planes, and they smashed them into a building. And nobody knew it was coming except the Israelis, who warned the US, and the British GCHQ that warned the US. Nobody knew it except supposedly the US, even though it was, you know, all the cons with the guy who owned the buildings, and he got the renewal for his insurance just before it all happened, and he's stinking. He was stinking rich then, but he stinks a lot more now. But you see, all these cons that go on, never mind all the companies that knew in advance were tipped off, get out. And they did before it all happened. Closed down in the Trade Center, Twin Towers. You can go on forever with it, you see. But the simple stuff is there, you see, simple. If it was two pats, you would know it was two pats. It was too scripted. It's the same with Ebola. You know, Ebola. It kind of flows off your tongue. Ebola, you know. First you have Hezbollah, now you have Ebola, you know. Then you have Obama. Then you had Osama. Oh, yay. Who makes this stuff up? Huh? But you don't stop and put it in together, do you? And have a good laugh. Never happens. Even though the guys who were in with Bush Jr. during 9/11 published their agenda on their own website, this private company or group, the New American Century Group, of all the countries wanting to take out, and we've been doing it. The last two we don't have are Syria proper with Assad in it, because they want rid of him, and we've got Iran as well. They published it twice in the 90s. And we've all forgotten it. And so they give you fantastic names. Al-Qaeda. Ooh, Al-Qaeda. And we've had the exposés on Al-Qaeda from guys who were in it during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And so it was an informal group of different fighters that were trained by the US and Europe and armed to the teeth, and taught how to fight against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. And some of them even refer to Al-Qaeda as the radio network they used to communicate to each other, the different groups. You see? And then you have the latest transformation. And everybody's forgotten that Al-Qaeda was supported and getting funded through Qatar by the US. That was in the papers here. And funded and supplied with their arms and all their food supplies and everything else, and money. You understand that any army, formal or informal, will pack up and go home if they don't get paid. People want these little tidbits, self-benefits, coinage, some kind of thing, as a reward for their time. You all do it. You work. Even though you're getting less and less with purchasing power as they keep devaluing your currencies, which is all the plan too. But you wouldn't go to work if you weren't getting paid, you see. And armies are the same. There's not much looting and raping you can do before you get fed up and go home, you see. And this is from, they've always known this. That's why civilization, as the big elite call it, started with the advent of currency. Even when they weighed the currency out, and they coined it about 800 BC, and since then it's been, oh, fantastic weapon here. You can buy people to go and kill for you. And everyone's forgotten that last year, the US was in all the papers, for goodness sake. The US and Britain were putting massive funding of the military the arms shipments for Al-Qaeda to continue through Syria and financing them, like paychecks, etc. Otherwise, they say they'd go home. And then Putin stepped in for a world conference to stop this, because everybody's fed up across the planet, the US, military going everywhere on the behest of international corporations. They want all the oil, all the gold, everything, remember? And Putin stepped in and says, you know, this has got to stop. This has got to stop, this constant warfare. And the West backed off a bit. Oh, well, because Putin got a lot of support, you see, for that beautiful political maneuver. Got a lot of support. And the West backed off for a little while. Went back to work. And when they pull out the top hat then, like the magician, ISIS. Remember, too, Al-Qaeda supposedly was sweeping all through Africa and other countries. All through it a year ago. And that was the biggest threat to the whole world a year ago. And we had little fracases across different little parts of Africa a year ago with Al-Qaeda. And all over the papers they said, oh, AmeriCorps, or AfriCorps they called it. Other folk call it AmeriCorps. But AfriCorps, the African militaries had to combine and at least show some strength against this terrible threat across Africa of Al-Qaeda, you see. And I said, if they can't get enough, the US would have to go in there, you see, military, to pacify these parts of all over Africa that held these little bands of Al-Qaeda, we were told. Suddenly it's all gone. Have you heard of it recently? It's like it all disappeared. As I say, an invented ISIS. Now, nobody over in those countries calls themselves ISIS. It was admitted again in the papers here that the media, that's what we're told, the media were responsible for inventing the name ISIS, you see. But it does a great job of obfuscation, of blurring things, you see. Because everybody might have remembered, wait a minute, Al-Qaeda, didn't Putin step in last time when they were ready to finish off Syria and kick out Assad like they always wanted? Israel wants it, the US wants it, and a whole bunch of countries want it. It's been on their papers, it's no secret. And then you had this obfuscation, where they kind of haze things over for you because you're catching on too much, and they've got to make it obscure, you see. So suddenly, we're sending all the military in to fight ISIS. And if you noticed, they're not separating, say, the authorized Syria, meaning the standard Syrian government and country. They're not differentiating it from, say, the rebel-held territory. They're saying Syria now. So in your head, all Syria is bad. And so the US military and other militaries are only... In other words, the original plan of getting rid of Assad and taking over everything that Syria has and all their oil too, etc., is going to be the big reward they get for it. You see? And it's not the guys that they're paying, the mercenaries that they're paying, these armies, to do it. They're not going to get the reward. No, the same guys that got the rewards... the big BP, Shell, and all the rest of them, they got the rewards dished out to them in Iraq. I can get the same things here, you see. Big corporations, and many of them are actually owned by Goldman Sachs. You know that Goldman Sachs owns stacks of corporations in the military-industrial complex. All the top ones, they own them. The top shareholders that run that whole damn thing own the whole lot. It's fascinating to go into. But again, we've all forgotten Al-Qaeda, and all we hear now is ISIS, 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 ISIS. Yep. What a joke. As I say, the mercenaries over there don't call themselves that. It's just fascinating to me. Fascinating. They never run out of bullets, you notice, or mortar shells or anything else. They don't run out of anything. Huh? Well, these guys don't make this stuff to supply themselves. Who is supplying them? The West. It's still the West. It's the same bunch of mercenaries that was called Al-Qaeda that are bashing away under the name ISIS. And supposedly the whole military, might and air force in the US and Britain, all these countries, they just can't bash these rebels, you know. They keep missing them. No, they're after clearing out Assad, you see, taking down what's left of the whole country of Syria. That was always our agenda back in the New American Century Plan of, you know, the second publication was 1998. All the guys, Wolfowitz and the rest of them, Rumsfeld, etc., all involved in the same group with George Bush Jr. But we've all forgotten it all. We've lost our sanity here. But then you're terrified. You've also been hit with the bank crash of 2000. No, do again. All these guys raking in millions of dollars at the top. Experts, you know, and universities and all that stuff too. And nobody saw this coming. If that's experts, God help us, eh? On anything. Nobody saw it coming. It was a complete mystery that the top banks were ripping everybody off and selling junk bonds and everything else and homes that were valued over 1,000 times what they're actually valued at. And what's a value anyway? It's just somebody's idea or price, isn't it? And they're all trading these worthless houses and throwing them up the ladder to the next bunch of mugs that wanted a fast profit and who would turn them over again. Until supposedly it all came and get us, the bubble burst, and down it came. And they're going to fix it all. They're always going to fix it, you see. And I've told you years ago, many years ago, they'll never fix that. Same thing that the Rothschilds used in Britain to get the Bank of England. They'll never fix it because, you see, the boys, these guys run the whole system. They ain't going to let it be fixed. They always want to do this. They always plunder the planet, but with depressions at least twice a century. And we live through it again. Oh, well, they're going to fix it now, you know. And you want to believe it, you see. So you can go back to what you think is normal. It never goes back to normal because your currency is never, ever the same purchasing power again. And so you're buying less and less with more and more money. You're buying less real goods for more money. People, I tell you, make you want to shake your head. And this is the con game that we live in, thinking it's all quite normal because we've been brainwashed and you're thinking it's normal. And everyone else adapts, therefore I've adapted and I'm sane. Yep. And back again around 1998, 99, 2000, I mentioned on the air a documentary I'd seen. And it was on the company, a big gold and diamond company in London. And it showed you the documentary. It was an official documentary put out by the big boys or a BBC or somewhere. And they showed you, at that time it was Sierra Leone, and they said that it's one of the biggest diamond producers in the world, Sierra Leone. The problem with big corporations is, you see, if you have an official government there, they want their cut and their tax money and all the rest of it, and have rules and regulations for safety. Well, that's a nuisance to big corporations. If you can demolish the governments or get them fighting endless wars and impoverishing them and get little bands taken over like they've done across Iraq, then you just pay the biggest warlord there who's still pretty minute compared to a big government, and it's a lot cheaper to get everything out for almost nothing, all the resources out. Anyway, this documentary showed you the mercenaries there. They're all British and US and different countries that ex-military that were now mercenaries, and they showed them working with the actual groups under fire in Sierra Leone, and then they went to a big corporation in London, one of these big towers that they have there, and there's the typical character sitting there with his proper accent, you see, and proper education. Who did give an interview, and they were asked, well, your company is one of the big companies that are financing this endless war in Sierra Leone and financing the mercenaries. He says, why are you doing it? And the guy literally acted though he was aghast at it all. Like, what a ridiculous question. And that's how they really see it from their point of view at the top, where this is normal daily fare. And he says, well, there's all these people living on the land there on top of all this wealth, and they're doing nothing with it, he said. Though he just answered a stupid, stupid question. And from his point of view, it was awfully stupid because it sits daily fare with him. So that's why they did it. They've always done this nonsense. Psychopaths at the top think you're stupid if you can't see the reason they give you. Because from their point of view, you really are stupid. They can't imagine that you're different in a certain sense. Wouldn't you do it if you can grab all those diamonds and gold for nothing? And it doesn't matter how many documentaries that's kind of churned out, with the horse's mouths telling you what they're up to and why, you'll forget it all. And then you fall into the traps of, well, AmeriCorps or AfriCorps must get across the whole of Africa to wipe out the Al-Qaeda that suddenly disappeared, you see, from the news. And where's all the US forces going? To all these countries that have gold and diamonds, etc. And then Ebola, same thing, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and a few and on. You can't put it together, can you? You can't do it, can you? So it's announced, are we sending out massive military teams over, or say hospital teams or what? No. Not over to Liberia or anywhere else. We're sending in thousands of troops, guns and grenades and stuff, because we're going to blow up the germs and the viruses. Ooh. Huh? There's only one reason you send in armed troops anywhere. I don't care if they want to do the Orwellian con game of double thing. They're not killers, they're peacekeepers. Oh no. That's what soldiers turned into, peacekeeping, you know. Well, you could use that the same with the Nazis. Why can't you accept that with the Nazis? They were keeping the peace. Huh? Or the communists through their massive rampage of slaughter. Oh, they were trying to keep peace. They're peacemakers. They even give each other Nobel Prizes and things. Isn't that amazing, eh? Depends who you are, of course, if you get the prize or not. If you're not on the list, they'll use you, then kill you off rather nastily. Like they did with Gaddafi. And they'll even show you pictures of it happening. But do we remember anything? No. We've got everything popping up except Osiris. Woo. Or Ra himself. Maybe that'll be next. Huh? What do you think? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on you. Oh, sorry, the other way around, isn't it? You keep forgetting how many times you've been shamed. You can't remember who's shaming you, even yourself. Don't forget it. Shame on you once, you see. Shame on me if you fool me twice. How many times are we getting shamed here? And even the folk who should know better, all the so-called 9/11 truthers and so on, all these groups, are part in all the same rubbish. We're all going to die of Ebola. The banks are already, remember, you've already forgotten, the same con men that who benefit incredibly from every crash they cause. And they give it to others more bonuses afterwards, like congratulations, we conned them again. And we bail them out, eh? And now they've got the bail-ins. Like started with Cyprus, we've forgotten all about it. But the International Monetary Fund, the big kingpin of all the big global mafia that runs the world, and it's not Italian, by the way, but the Bank for International Settlements was set up by all the big corporate boys that want to standardize the planet. You think Rockefeller was just standardizing oil? No, he was standardizing the medical system, the pharmaceutical system, everything that they had a hold on, over and money in. They standardized it. The whole idea was to standardize the world and standardize the population and their minds. Standardize. That's what it was about. Standard oil, standard, standard, standard. Until you're all getting standardized with the same parroting nonsense. Beautiful, isn't it? It wasn't just Rockefeller. The massive conglomerate that already existed before anybody had heard the name Rockefeller simply used his family as the front, or one front down through the centuries, to implement all of this part of it. That was all. The big massive think tanks, the big foundations that finance all the non-governmental organizations that are telling you to sterilize yourself and eat crickets. You see? Because good for you, and it'll save the planet. Don't eat meat. They fund every non-governmental organization out there, and hundreds of their kin, because they're all related to all these foundations. Some of them are simply front foundations and chains of front foundations to pass the money on from the main ones to all, to more groups. That's a lot to take care of, you know, all these thousands of NGOs across the world that now is taken over supposedly from a something called democracy. What's democracy? What? You know, when you had a say in something, yeah, democracy, they called it. That's a shame that people can't look back. It's a shame you don't read the old books written about democracy when they were inventing the idea in ancient times. It always failed because it was always a con job. And reintroducing it back in the late 1800s into the early 20th century too. Winston Churchill, when he was a young guy, talked about it in his club, who was behind it, and he knew who was behind it, all right. It was public knowledge at that time, and politically correct way of saying things is that it was a communist, but there was, he actually said who was behind it, because communism itself is a front, you see. This is an absurd idea, this idea of democracy. Because Britain was a fixed, rigid system of classes. You see, everybody knew their place. The elite know that, and they love it. You know, do you know your place? Yeah, you better mind your place. That should be a favourite term you heard at school in different places at one time. Mind your place. But democracy gave the illusion they actually had a say, and they presented you exactly the same as the Soviet system, Politburo member number 1, 2, or 3, take your pick. Here they say, oh, left wing, right wing, or in the middle, whatever that happens to be, and you believe it too. It's all the same agenda. Nothing changes, is it? Con after con after con, and you get caught up in it, and the media pushes elections as though it was some kind of sports game. You think it's a coincidence? Is it a coincidence they can use the same techniques that somehow make men, especially, lose their brains during a sports game with the hype and the screen, as though you were involved in running up that field? Not all that nonsense. Somehow you're involved, your guy is in the lead, and oh, wow, and he'll get any power, and everything will be nice, and a utopia will come out of it. Huh? What? You never learn, do you? Never. And folk turn to what they think is alternative media to let them know what's going on, really going on. And they're conned just the same way. Be terrified about this today. Be terrified about that tomorrow. Be terrified. Be terrified. And buy all this stuff at the same time from us. That's the stuff you see here consistently. And you don't catch on. We're all losing our brains here. Do you really think that with the power and control and the multi-thousands of people working for every government and agencies and total awareness network and all the rest of it, where they know everything in real time, that they just keep blundering at the top? Do you want to believe that? Do you want to believe it? Do you know how many sleepers have got out there and informants with all different groups? If you started a poetry group up in your local library that had some poems about this is all nasty and please be nice to us because it's not very nice at the moment, thank you very much, you'd have someone in there to make sure that's what you were there for and you didn't go overboard with it, like retaliation of any kind. And I'm not kidding you, nothing in the system is missed. Nothing. But be very afraid, be terrified. When we tell you be terrified. And obey us. For your own safety. For goodness sake. Now, I want to touch just before I go off tonight here, because I have to get back tomorrow to this well problem I've got with water and all that, which is eternal, it's just incredible. But anyway, the militarization of the police, and I've talked about it an awful lot long before I mentioned the book Rise of the Warrior Cop by a professor and so on. Awfully good book. I don't get any money, by the way, for mentioning any book here, because I don't even know the people, I've not spoken to them. But it was by Radley Balkle, and it's an incredible book about the details, the facts, the financing, as they militarize the police state across the world. And I said years ago in the 90s that they've been doing it way back. I mentioned it then. They're doing it now. I said, why is this? It's for something all coming down the road in the future. Big changes. Remember all the statements you've heard and you've forgotten about too? Even by folk like Al Gore. I can remember when he said the internet would change the world and the way we think and change our whole way of doing things and being and all the rest of it. They meant it. They meant it. But you see, they planned how you're going to get changed. They planned how you're going to end up thinking and what to think and what you're going to do yourself and all the rest of it. It was all planned ahead, way before Al Gore came along. Yeah. But Rise of the Warrior Cop, and they militarized the police force across the world. Whatever movie you see from Italy or wherever it happens to be, there's the guys with the black gear and all the armor on, and the black hats and the night vision on there, and their guns, they're like stuck. I think they're born that way. I'm beginning to wonder if the average person in the US, especially with the crusade trying out most of the movies, they come out the womb clad in this stuff. Because they walk, every movie you see, there's a SWAT team, and they all look the same. Robots, like Star Wars. And you can't tell who's who, because you're not meant to. They're all to be a group that scare you blazes, you see. Like dozens of robots. They have balaclavas over their faces at the same time, and the helmets on top. And these big things sticking out the helmets that are their night vision and all that. Very intimidating, you see. And the guns are stuck to their shoulder, and they can't move from that position holding that gun as they walk slowly along. Going side to side, side to side. Thousands of movies churned out, until, and again it encourages all the young guys, and there's guys going up, turning 18 and all that, there's folk who weren't alive when that 9/11 happened. And all I've known is anti-terrorism. Basically a form of martial law. That's all they've known, and they think it's normal. And the winning team is the guys with these guns that come out the womb with the armour on, they're all black, and they go side to side with that gun stuck to their shoulder, side to side, slow, slow. And they want to be in the winning team. So you've got a whole army for the future that'll just flow into this new system. And they're already doing it, they've been doing it for a few years, and they think it's all quite natural. And then it's them against you. Because once you belong to a group with all the same gear, you're uniform. One form. Anybody without that form is one of them. You see? And that's how all these movies portray it, one of them. You're not in the brotherhood. Wow. I could go on forever about this. But anyway, here's an article here. And I mentioned this with The Rise of the Warrior Cop, the book. And it says here this is from RT News, October 7th, 2014. And it says here, Battleground America, U.S. Army surplus even going to coroners as militarization rampant. You see, the Pentagon's is called 1033 program. That's the program where they use your tax money to buy surplus military and use military gear to give to all the different agencies out there. All of them. Anything with the government, they're getting all this stuff. And have been for years and years and years. So not only has your tax money bought it the first time, you're not buying it a second time. Isn't it a beautiful scam? Never tell you who's the middleman, or do they? Oh. But anyway, it says, the 1033 program, which is militarizing state and local police forces with everything from high-powered firearms to armored vehicles, is also giving weapons to officials who have no law enforcement functions. Like, that's news. It's not news to me, maybe to lots of other people. The practice is leading watchdogs and even some US government officials to question why the US military is so desperate to unload its cache of used military hardware that is even willing to arm a local coroner and other state and local officials who have no apparent need for firepower. It says Doug Wortham is the coroner in Sharp County, Arkansas, whose working day consists of dealing with dead people. It normally does. There's no such thing as a dead loss in this system here. The folk who make money off everything, even your body parts and stuff, and even weighing that liver. Oh yeah, another liver here, it weighs so much, and blah, blah, blah. And they cut folk up and stitch them up and all that. And then the undertaker makes a fortune off you too in your grief to bury you or burn you, whatever. It says, explaining his need for the extra firepower, Wortham, who qualified for the program because he's a coroner, he says he's invested with the authority to arrest. That's why. He's a coroner. He doesn't use the power to arrest, but he's invested with the authority to arrest, he told AP. And he says, I just wanted to protect myself. How do you protect yourself? Well, here's how he did it. It's also reported that the coroner's office acquired items through the program, the 1033 program, but forfeited its rights last year following revelations about some of its procurements, including a kayak. Oh, they're getting all kinds of things thrown at them. I've read these articles before, not the same one, but many, many other ones. Even bayonets and things. It says, why would a coroner's office need a kayak? Asked Tina Owens, Deputy Director of Arkansas Department of Emergency Management, as cited by AP. City watchdog groups have been sounding the alarm over the militarization of local and state law enforcement agencies for years, it says here. And they have. It says, however, the August shooting death of black teenager Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, followed by violent protests that pitted hundreds of protesters against heavily armed police clad in military gear, attracted public attention to the issue. And it says, in August, the White House ordered a review of the 1033 program, which mostly delivered excess weapons and tactical equipment to local police departments. Mostly, it says here. Where's the rest of it go? Well, I won't mention that. It's in a whole new program or show. According to the AP report, however, numerous government agencies not directly connected with law enforcement also took advantage of the gun giveaway, including government agencies that enforce gaming laws at Kansas tribal casinos and weigh 18 wheelers in Missouri to the Wyoming Livestock Board and the Cumberland County Alcoholic Beverage Control Board in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Here are some of the agencies that receive weapons and military gear through this program. The Harbor Master in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, received a Humvee for negotiating tough terrain. That's probably a completely armored one, too. Tough terrain. I mean, the potholes are getting bad. The potholes are really bad now for your suspension. But it says, and a night vision scope to spot boaters in the dark. I wonder what else these pervs are watching. Anyway, it says, the Arkansas Tobacco Control Agency acquired 5 12-gauge shotguns for its agents, who help regulate tobacco retailers and wholesalers. The Wyoming Livestock Board, which provides Glocks and .45 caliber handguns to its officers, who investigate the cattle thefts and other industry-related crimes. The Mississippi Department of Transportation got 7 M14 rifles through the program, it reported. Any investigation into the weapons giveaway, however, will be hampered by the program's cloak of secrecy that only reveals information on the county local regarding the transfers. Meanwhile, the battle-grade equipment accounted for a fraction of the used items available, with some agencies participating in the program to receive official equipment and other such goods, AP said. I mentioned before, they get grade launchers and everything. I just think this is to go after the war on drugs and stuff. Everything's nonsense. The war on this, the war on that, and the war. The war is on all of you folks all the time. And mind you, all the movies that they do makes it awfully attractive, doesn't it? Because the good guys are always the guys that are smashing doors down everywhere, aren't they? And you want to be, oh, they're the good guys. They've got a badge. Look, see? Symbols are amazing. Someone shows you a badge and suddenly you do what you're told. Symbols, eh? Isn't that amazing? And now it says, it was only through information voluntarily provided to AP was able to discover the destination of the inventories. Police officers, says, fire canisters of tear gas on protest. Oh, they show you them using this kind of stuff. That's the simple stuff. That's gas canisters. It says, meanwhile, it was early revealed that at least 26 school districts have participated in the Pentagon's weapons program, which since the 1990s has provided free military surplus goods, including mine-resistant armored vehicles, grenade launchers, and M16 rifles. Last month, the San Diego, and they call it all the body armor too. Last month, the San Diego Unified School District Police Department announced it had received from the federal government a $733,000 mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle similar to the models used in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Wow. Just like the movies, eh? You got your own special fancy vehicle that's all scary looking and stuff. Although the 18-ton vehicle doesn't come with any weapons, watchdog groups are wondering exactly what type of school emergency would require the use of an armoured military vehicle. Eh? It's because the students are going to riot about the school lunches, maybe. Anyway, it says the ongoing militarization of school police departments has been explained by incidences of violence on school grounds, most notably the 1999 Columbine High School massacre, which left 15 dead, etc. Mind you, the agencies also knew this was coming up. There's a whole story to that long before it happened, including a practice run of teachers asking them, the students, if you want to do something in a fantasy way, play it out and do a video. And they did it through the school as though they're walking around the school shooting everybody. This is way before it happened, and with real guns and all that. Same guys. And they even put their own videos up and them firing off all these firearms in the forest, all these youngsters. And then the FBI and all the rest of them were watching them like a hawk. But they let it happen, didn't they? And they're all seeing psychiatrists. Oh, boy. They're always taken by surprise, you see. No one saw it coming. In September, almost two dozen educational and civil rights groups sent a letter to Pentagon officials urging them to stop militarizing U.S. school police departments, which have been reported in California, Texas, Nevada, Utah, Florida, Georgia, Kansas, and Michigan. It said adding the presence of military-grade weapons to school climates that become increasingly hostile due to their over-reliance on the police to handle routine student discipline can only exacerbate existing tensions, said the protest letter, signed by a number of groups including the NAACP, Legal Defense and Educational Fund, and Children's Law Center and Public Counsel. President Barack Obama in August ordered a review of federal programs that allow state and local law officials or enforcement to acquire military-grade weapons and equipment. Nothing will happen there. It's just playing the game, you see, because that's the agenda. You see, they haven't just militarized everything, folks. All these agencies. It's still in all these massive movies funded by the Pentagon to your tax money once more to brainwash yourselves. It works awfully well. And you lap the stuff up, movie after movie, drama after drama, with these guys, again, coming out the womb with their black gear on, you know, and this thing stuck to their shoulder and two hands on it, and the funny things in front of their eyes for night vision and side to side slowly. Oh, scary. These are the good guys. They smash their doors down, the citizens. These are the good guys. And blow open the doors off the hinges in that way with different explosives. Boom! And you watch this stuff, because you've been told the guys inside are bad. Bad, 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 bad. Who generally have committed, if they committed anything at all, which often happens, they haven't done anything, it's misinformation, they've got the wrong houses and stuff. If they're doing anything at all, they're smoking some weed or something, which was not the high criminal, deadly offence they portray in the movies. Anyway, that's a whole, again, another story altogether, isn't it? Another story completely altogether. But the fact is, you see, here's the key. They haven't just militarized all these agencies and police. You see, your brain has been militarized by all the rubbish and indoctrination you've been watching, because you think in the fictional form, the good guys are smashing the door down of all these houses, all the doors, to keep you all safe. And you've been brainwashed, and so you allow it to get even worse. And real life gets worse, and you think that's normal. Do you think all these agencies are there to go after folks smoking weed? Huh? Do you? You need an internal army for what's coming down the pike. And the big boys have planned this before a lot of you were born out there. And they've planned it so well and implemented it so well through all their movies and dramas and yada yada yada, until you're now ready to accept all of it. All of it. But the same guys who can do such careful planning and all the rest of it, the total information network and so on, total dominance of everything, all media and blah, blah. You think they just miss things like, my God, there's a big outbreak of Ebola out there in Africa. And they wait till something happens, supposedly. And you believe that too. And then, of course, you notice even Australia, only a few weeks ago had that big raid, supposedly, on all possible Al-Qaeda type or ISIS type sleeper terrorists in the country. And there was guys that looked at different sites and so on that were going to purport to stir up violence, generally run by the governments. And young guys go into and get into the sites and get carried away with it. Because it's easy to use young guys, that's why they only use young guys for the military. And you know. Anyway, Australia had that a few weeks ago. And it kind of died down again. It didn't have the impact it was supposed to have, because I think most of the guys they arrested, they were let go. And then you have Ebola. Oh, it's happened in Australia too. Oh, phew. They haven't bored with Canada so far, because Canadians are pretty laid back. And we do what we're told, you see. But in the US, oh, we never saw this coming. Yeah, well, yeah, we had a vague recollection of a massive outbreak in Africa somewhere in Liberia. We didn't think you'd check them coming in from Liberia. No, it just didn't. And you believe this rubbish? Huh? As I say, this guy may or may not even exist. I don't know. I certainly don't take anything at face value. I mean, who swore the hospital staff to complete secrecy here? Why would you do that? Like the Official Secrets Act. Why? I mean, think about it, folks. Why would you do that? It's awfully important to know. And then it's supposedly a person who treated them in the hospital has got in a hospital staff. Oh my God, it's spreading. We're going to die. Die. Save us. Save us. Maybe they'll save you the same militarized SWAT teams. They come in with their guns and grenades and mortars and everything. And bazookas and armored vehicles. The same way they're going to save the folk in Liberia by sending over the military over there. And Sierra Leone, where the diamonds now are. I tell you, it's a mystery to me. But, folks. Fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice. Shame on me. From Hamish, myself, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night. May your God or your gods go with you.